time for the Lunch Break on ESPN 106.7, Auto Opelika's sports leader. To be a part of the show, give us a call at 321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or tweet us at Lunch Break ESPN.
Painter Sharpless and Zach Blackerby here with you. Excited to be with Zach today. I do want to start out the show in a little bit more of a somber but also memorable way, as I'm sure more and more of you are learning. Our dear friend Chuck Furlow is no longer with us. He passed last night. And if you knew Chuck, you knew him to be a good friend, a mentor, one of the most compassionate and genuinely kind people I've ever met. And I think a lot of times when people pass, there are lots of kind words, and it's understandable. But with Chuck, it does, if you talk to about anyone, former students, coworkers, friends, they would say, I think, a lot of the same, that he was genuinely kind and empathetic and a good community member, and he cared about other people. And so we will certainly miss Chuck and his contributions, not only to the show and to the network, but everything he did in his time. And, you know, I'm sure Bill will have more to say on the drive today, as he and Chuck were great friends. But I did want to say that, and we're thinking about Lynn and Chuck's family.
Yeah, I mean, Chuck Furlow, a guy that, I mean, you know, you mentioned we'll miss having him on our shows here, but we'll miss having him in our lives. We'll miss having him around the office. And absolutely terrible news coming out last night, shortly after the Auburn basketball game. So our thoughts and prayers are with Lynn, as well as the community. I mean, Chuck's passing is going to affect a lot of people. I mean, you know, I host a morning news talk show, and we have all of our talent's pictures up on the wall behind where Painter's sitting currently, but where I sit in the morning. And guests come in, and they see all these names, and they, you know, 80% of the people that sit down, they say, oh, man, Chuck Furlow, what a guy. And, yeah, hopefully, I don't know. It's hard to put into words, Painter.
With that said, we will go to the phones early on today. Justin Ferguson, on a much lighter note, is going to hear from Gus Malzahn in just more than 10 minutes. So we'll keep you up to date there. We'll talk about Auburn's win against Colgate, an impressive win over a team with a lot of experience that won its league last year. Auburn off to a good start. But let's first turn to Matt, 321-1390. Matt, what's up?
Hey, guys. I first met Chuck junior year when I was doing videotape for Auburn High School football. And he was sitting down in the end zone watching the football game, and I was being the rowdy person that I am. And I started talking to him, and I enjoyed talking to him. And then I helped out with the radio station a little bit. And Chuck is like you said, just a genuine guy. He really cared about everyone. I always enjoyed our conversations about it. I always liked enjoying talking football and how to do things differently in that. And it's just sad news that I heard over the radio waves this morning. But I know he's in a better place. And, man, I'm going to miss that guy.
Understandable. Yeah, Matt, I think you are echoing a lot of the sentiment that people around here will feel, and we appreciate the call. If you want to join in to talk anything sports related, or certainly if you want to remember Chuck, we would appreciate both of those things. Thank you, Matt. Again, here on a lighter note, Zach Blackerby joining today. Justin Ferguson will be joined with Gus Malzahn in 10 minutes. So we will keep you up to date. And curious to hear what Gus says, although I think it'll be limited, Zach. You know, the players had a couple of days off after a really physical and, I'm sure, disappointing Georgia loss. We did not hear from Gus Sunday night. They'll have Samford upcoming, which sort of whatever. I guess we haven't talked too much, Zach, because I haven't been on the Locked On Auburn podcast with you since the Georgia game.
Sure.
Give me, if you would, some of your takeaways from this game. I know you had Josh Vitale on the podcast yesterday, and he was on the lunch break yesterday as well.
Yeah, and Josh had a lot to say on my show, as well as I'm sure he did here. But, I mean, I think it really just comes down to what in the world is wrong with Auburn's offense. And, you know, I straight up asked Josh, and admittedly, I have a hard time realizing what exactly it is. And I think it kind of varies from game to game. I don't think the play calling was terrible against Georgia. I think the execution was off. I think the offensive line had a hard time getting a push. I think Bo Nix was okay. I mean, as much as you can asking a true freshman to pass the ball 50 times. I mean, there are so many factors affecting why this offense isn't able to consistently move the football. And it's I'm sure it's frustrating for all of those involved. I'm sure it's frustrating for pretty much the majority of folks listening. And, I mean, if you're pulling for Auburn, it's fun to watch them when they're on defense. But, I mean, Malzahn brought an offensive culture, or, you know, you thought when they hired him, you know, several years ago.
He was innovative. Yeah, no, he did. That's a fair thing to say. When he was at Arkansas and Tulsa and for his time as OC, and I think even stretching into the first few years, probably by the time he was head coach, a lot of people were catching on at that point at Auburn. But, I mean, for the first few years at Arkansas, Tulsa, and probably Auburn's offensive coordinator, yeah, he was an innovator. He was ahead of the curve.
And it's wild because now the question is, okay, where is that gone? And, I mean, he missed a prime opportunity to beat Georgia. I mean, that was a very, very winnable game. I mean, the
defense, 2017-esque, right, in the way that it changes the perception of the season completely?
I think so. But I think in 2017, you look at it and you're like, okay, well, that Georgia team is probably better than that Auburn team, despite Auburn beating the brakes off of them. You know, and I think you saw that a few weeks later when one guy went down for Auburn, you know, without carry on. You know, sure. I think it's clear which team was better. But when you look at this team, I'm not convinced that Georgia was a better football team from top to bottom. I mean, the roster that Malzahn has put together and the way that he has developed some key positions, I think is incredible. You know, and I know it's a fun and popular topic to throw out that Malzahn doesn't develop talent, but I think with what you're about to see in the draft, you saw the draft last year, and I think with what you're about to see in the draft this year and then the following year, I think that's going to change. If you want to say the offensive scheme has fallen apart and you want to say, you know, the quarterback play should be better than it is based on the talent you're bringing in, I'm okay with that. But, I mean, as far as what you have on your top 50 to 60 roster spots, I mean, Auburn is in the top tier as far as talented football teams. And when you lose at home to teams that you're just as talented as or possibly better, I think it's that's an issue. That is definitely an issue. Because, I mean, I say this all the time with Nick Saban, and now I say it with Dabo Swinney. But you look at it, it's like if those guys lose any football games this year, I think you underachieve because you have a better team roster-wise and talent-wise than literally anyone you're going to face until maybe you play
Ohio State
other one.
Would probably be the exception to that. We'll find out in a few weeks.
Yeah, but, I mean, you can count on one hand the exceptions to all of those. And I think that's kind of the curse of when you recruit really well and develop really well. And that's kind of what Auburn has run into because this team should not be losing three times in a game. But then you could three times in a season. But then you could throw out the whole argument of, well, it's a really tough conference and it's a really tough schedule. And while that's true, when you go through the doldrums of the SEC, I mean, these other teams are doing it as well. I know, sure, you beat Oregon earlier in the season, and that was a huge win, especially when you see what Oregon's able to do now. But it's frustrating. It's frustrating to watch. You expect kind of every drive they go out there when the defense keeps giving the offense a chance. You're like, all right, kind of got a feeling they're about to break it, and they don't. And then Georgia goes into zone, and they get two quick scores, and then Georgia goes back to doing what they're doing. And, you know, on the Locked On Auburn podcast that I put up today, and you can check it out wherever you listen to podcasts, but I just took a bunch of voicemail calls, and there was pretty much four or five different callers that said, hey, it looks like Bo Nix is a lot better and a lot more comfortable when they're doing that hurry up, no huddle. And I really don't think the success that Auburn found offensively late in the game against Georgia had a whole lot to do with what Auburn was doing. I think it had more to do with what Georgia did defensively, and they kind of bailed out of their man-on-man matchups. Because the issue here is, when you look at who Bo Nix is throwing to, only Seth Williams. Seth Williams was the only guy that can consistently win a one-on-one matchup. And I think that is a problem. I think that's a problem. And, you know, you kind of look at the guy that suited up for Georgia, George Pickens. You know, it kind of makes that hurt a little bit.
Absolutely. I am less interested in talking about Gus Malzahn on the hot seat. You can go almost anywhere and find that conversation.
I'm curious how much on the hot seat he is.
Go ahead.
I just think at the end of the season, I think he's going to beat Alabama. And I think you're going to end up being 9-3 with a win against Alabama. And I think you take that. I think you should be happy about that. And I know there's a section of the fan base that says, well, Alabama has their backup quarterback and it's going to have an asterisk next to it. I think once that happens and once the Iron Bowl gets here and you're watching it and Auburn is scoring more points in Jordan-Hare than Alabama in the Iron Bowl, I think that opinion is going to go away.
Beating Alabama helps with a lot, and regardless of how frustrated people are right now, beating your biggest rival, your in-state rival, a team that is averaging a national title every other season and has yet to miss the college football playoffs, will be a big deal. But I am less interested in the conversation about Gus Malzahn, his hot seat, who's going to perhaps replace him, and more interested in talking about this. Is it acceptable in your mind at the end of the year, and hear me out here, to say that the offense or the team is a work in progress? Because I think it is inherently true. You look at Auburn High School. They're a good example of this in a weird way. They struggled some at the beginning of the year, and I know it's different. We're talking about high school football here and totally different teams.
I'm following you.
But at the end of the season, again, they started playing well. They're playing their best football in the playoffs right now. They just beat the number one, or at least then the number one ranked. So it's like, it is a true thing to say teams are not a finished product until the season's over. But is it fair to say this with your second to last conference game and another loss? I mean, when you look at that record overall against your biggest rivals, who, by the way, are often in the top 10, is just not very good.
I think, I don't think you can compare the two. And here's why. Because I think the format is different. And, I mean, you know, Auburn High, while they peaked late in the year, they still lost three games.
Right.
And but you can lose three games and make the playoffs. You can lose more than that and make the playoffs. And you can say, you know, well, it stinks if you start out slow in college football. But honestly, I mean, you know what the game is going into the season. You know you need to start fast, especially when you schedule at Oregon. You know you need to win that. Or if you lose, you can't slip up again for the rest of the year. So, like, while he's telling the truth, you know that you can't lose more than two games and have a shot at the playoffs.
Well, and I think it's both true that a team is a work in progress until the season's over, because you're always trying to improve.
Yeah.
It's also, I just don't think at this point in the year a valid excuse.
I agree with you.
It also feels like one that has been given in the past, and it feels like now those are really drying up. Even the camp of Auburn fans that have very much supported Malzahn and are still doing so are frustrated about things like this. They're frustrated about hearing about the offense not being complete. And it's like, well, the freshman quarterback thing is something you can buy into, right? Because it's got to be rough. Your first two really, or your first three big road games are A&M and then Florida and LSU. But also the season's almost over. He is a freshman, but he's also played in a ton of games. And to be quite fair, Bo Nix, although he has struggled some in those big games, it's not the only problem.
Yeah, I think Bo has been fine. But if he wasn't the only option at quarterback, though. It's not like he had just, you know, some other people that he was competing against at quarterback that were totally, you know, inept. I mean, Joey Gatewood, no real experience, you know, redshirt freshman. I mean, even dating back, though, like if you were that worried about it being a freshman quarterback, we're going to use that as an excuse. Like, Malik Willis was an option. I don't think it was a real option, but like if you were that worried about starting a freshman quarterback, I mean, you had other options at some point in the past year.
321-1390 is how you can join Zach and me here on the lunch break. You can follow along at ESPNAU.com and the Listen Live Center with the ESPN 106.7 app and on Twitter at ESPN 106.7. Daniel, your turn.
Hey, guys. That's actually what I was going to call in about. What you just mentioned was, I think Gus Malzahn, in his true I don't really know how to do PR like Bruce Pearl kind of way, was just trying to say, look, we're going to keep working, and we're going to keep figuring this out. We haven't given up on ourselves. We haven't given up on our offense. But what he doesn't understand, how that echoes into, like you just said, our already frustrated fan base and maybe the powers that be, the brokers, saying, what do you mean you're figuring this out? This is your job. Like, yes, we want you to keep working at it, but this is your side of the ball. The other side of the ball is a work in progress, too. They make improvements and change every game, but look at their program they're running on that side of the ball. Look at where they are. Look at what they're accomplishing. And I think there was a pretty, I don't know if you'd call it an indicting statistics that Brandon Marcello shared in an article about being a work in progress. Auburn's offense from 2013 to now, and in both total offense and in rushing, 2018 and 2019 are at the bottom of both of those lists 7 years in. And that to me is the most painful and hard statistics that I have seen. If Gus was evaluating an offensive coordinator, and after 7 years with the same offensive coordinator, these past 2 years, both in rushing and in total production, were the two lowest, that's going to create unrest. That may create change. So it's just, it's sad, but I think that was Gus being less savvy and not him saying we don't know what we're doing at all, but it's still difficult to swallow, even as a Gus supporter.
Yeah, Daniel, I think a lot there that people can relate to. And I am curious about the conversation of what administrators think. But they have largely been quiet. And Auburn in an interesting place right now with an interim president. Alan Green to this point has not had to make a super controversial decision or hire. And I think he's played this well by keeping quiet.
And I don't think he's really going to have to make a decision anytime soon. I mean, I think it seems like all of the major coaching positions are set in stone through the end of this year. I mean, I just can't think of a scenario where Malzahn's not the head coach at Auburn next year unless he goes, unless the whole Arkansas thing is true and he just doesn't care about championships, wants job security, and, you know, gets paid close to the same thing, which I'm not going to fault him if he goes that route, but I don't think it's going to be Auburn's decision for him to leave.
Let's go back to the phone lines. Daniel, as always, appreciate the call. You can join 321-1390. Gus Malzahn joining beat reporters right about now, so we will turn to that in a moment. But first, let's go to Shadow.
Yes, am I on?
Yes, sir.
Who was that was just saying he didn't say a scenario?
What's up?
That was me, Shadow. Zach.
Well, isn't that just absolutely insane?
How so?
You can't see any scenario.
All right, well, let's go through them. So what are the options that could possibly happen with the Iron Bowl?
Sir, there's too many. Sir,
there's only two games left, Shadow. There's not too many.
Listen, there was a man named Mike Marshall. Have you ever heard of him?
No, tell me about him.
Well, he's a man that's covered Auburn for a long time, and he basically told the truth the other day. And he said that one game should not make a difference, that the people at Auburn have already got their mind made up. And, you're here trying to give me your logic, which makes perfectly no sense at all. For people that have any expectation of Auburn ever doing better, don't you think it would be a better show that y'all have if any of you gave a crap about Auburn?
Yes, Shadow, also you owe me a steak dinner. Sharif Cooper signed with Auburn.
What?
You made me a bet very recently. You know what? We've got it in the podcast. I'll pull it up for you.
Said, I want you to pull it up right now.
Well, I can't do that. We're in the middle of a show, but I can work on that.
Shadow, you know, I don't know.
Maybe we have it on recording. I just can't get up and walk away.
Off air, you know. What I need to do, call you back at a certain time when you got it queued up and you can prove your point?
I guess, man. I don't know. Shadow.
I mean, guys, y'all continue. I enjoy your program strictly from an entertainment.
Thank you.
Point, because as far as information, you know, I think you're lacking just a little bit here. But he basically said that the problem at Auburn is with the boosters. that he doesn't believe that they even think they can pick a great coach. And the buyout has added to the problem. So
those all seem like very valid points, Shadow. I mean, I think that...
I mean, those are probably true.
Yeah, I think right now there's not a coach that you feel real confident about coming in and doing supremely better than Malzahn. I don't think that's the board conspiring. I just think that they may, or not just the board, excuse me, but leaders at Auburn probably concerned that making this move right now isn't the right time.
Well, yeah, and you know, I tell you what, if they don't get on their ball about this, the program's going to go broke. You know, what do you think about Kevin Steele? There's talk about Kevin Steele. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't matter that he failed before as the head coach. You want to take the greatest defensive coordinator we've ever had, make him a head coach? I tell you what, the whole scenario, I hadn't heard but one man talk about the Auburn situation in a manner that makes sense, because nobody else can figure out, well, who the hell are we going to get? And I'm going to tell you, that is the biggest loser attitude I've ever heard in my life.
Well, Shadow, I would disagree with you there for two reasons. One, I think it's good to have a plan when you're making a decision this large. I mean, Gus Malzahn, in many ways, is a large part, or at least part of the face of Auburn. Football culturally and financially is huge. The other part of that is I'm really fascinated to see, because I do believe Gus will be here next year, what this team looks like. It has a lot of potential, but the offensive line, you know, could be a real struggle, or maybe they work it out. If you get a new coach, are you in part setting him up for failure? I think this is a pretty good roster coming back next year, actually, but next year could be an interesting season if they can't figure out the offensive line. So I don't think it's a loser mentality, but I do understand your frustration. You think Auburn can do better, and it feels like Auburn is stagnant. You're not the only one that feels that way. As always, appreciate it, and I'll be waiting on that steak dinner. But for now,
you got to queue it up. You got to queue it up for tomorrow.
That's fair. That's, you know what? I think that's a fair point. Also, let's now go to James, 321-1390, before we get to break, and we'll switch over to Gus Malzahn's press conference shortly. James, what's up, man?
Hey, what's going on? What's up, my man?
Yeah.
How you doing, boss?
Oh, I'm doing all right. Listen, you know, I'm listening to Shadow, and I think a lot of fans, because this past weekend I counted a lot of teams across the country. There are a lot of teams across the country that are sitting on 8 wins. Mm-hmm. A lot of teams. And they're not upper-tier programs, but they're sitting on 8 wins. I don't know why people think that, okay, if you lose 3 or 4 games, that's a bad season. But the point that I'm making, I'll just get straight to the point. You do not fire an 8-9-win coach. That's not a reason to fire a coach. I understand a rivalry game, and a lot of it, you know, that means a lot. I get that. But you don't fire an 8-9-win coach. It hasn't proven that that formula works. Nebraska tried. Nebraska was winning. This is on record. You can look it up now. Nebraska was winning 8 wins a season. They couldn't get over the hump. They fired the coach. They hadn't recovered since. They hadn't recovered since. Now, Georgia fired a 10-win coach.
Yeah.
This coach is doing the exact same thing. He's doing this. That Georgia is going nowhere.
Well, and the thing with Georgia, though, when they let go of a 10-win coach, a 9-win coach, whatever year you want to look at, at least they had a plan. At least they knew who their guy was when they got rid of Rich.
An unusually good plan because of his ties, and because it was a pretty, I think, well-known within the Georgia leadership that he wanted that job.
Yeah, I mean, we kind of knew that was going to happen, you know, 3 or 4 years prior to it happened. It's just, when is he going to make that move?
If it became open,
right,
as it seemed it would, because it's just hard to be a coach like Rick was at a place for that long. Like, eventually you kind of got it in the back of your mind, okay, this marriage will end.
Yeah.
It was, I think, a perfect storm, James.
Yes, but I said when they fired Mark Richt, first of all, when you fire any coach, you have to know what you're doing when you fire that coach. You don't just let them go like that. Now, they fired Mark Richt, and I said as soon as they fired him, I said the only place, the next coach that comes in, he has nowhere to go but down. Because if you're coming in to replace a guy that's been winning 10 games, you have to win a national championship. Okay, so they said, well, he's won one more game than Mark Richt was winning. Okay, but the results are still the same, though.
Yeah, I mean, so far, you know, you're right, and to some extent, they still haven't won that elusive national title, but And you're right, too. I mean, their win percentage is eerily similar going to SEC championship. Like, so, yeah, there are some really strange comparisons. But I would also say from this standpoint, sometimes it is just time to move on and get some fresh blood in. Rick did a ton. It is odd how fan bases tend to grow thankless over time, James. And I think there was some of that with Georgia. But I also think the smart hire turned out to be a good one. And by the time he's done at Georgia and he's a young guy, just like Rick was when he was hired, another weird thing that comparison you can make, I think that they will get that national title. He's recruiting at such a high level.
Okay. Thanks, guys. See you later, Zach.
See you, man. Thanks for calling in.
Bye.
Always good to hear from James and Shadow. We'll get to our first break now. About 2 minutes ago, Gus Malzahn took the podium. You can follow along with a number of folks at Josh Vitale, at Jay Ferguson, AU. We'll get to break. Zach Blackerby joining me today on the lunch break, 321-1390. The AHS report is Wednesday with Coach Adam Weingarten and voice of the Auburn High Tigers, Scott Bagwell. Don't miss that tomorrow after the drive with Bill Cameron.
The Lunch Break on ESPN 106.7.
Greg Peterson joining us today, folks. We love having Greg on the show. One of our favorites. Great insight. College basketball knowledge. Betting lines. All that and more with Greg Peterson. At GUnit_81 is where you can follow him. And I would if you are a college basketball fan. Greg, good to have you back on. How are you, my friend?
Doing great, gentlemen. How are you today?
Doing well. Let's start with the obvious. Auburn so far, 5-0. Impressive win over Colgate.
Yeah, and obviously, you know, a lot of talk about Colgate as Auburn hosted them here last night, Greg, as you know. But we got to ask the question, are you a Colgate guy or a Crest guy?
Well, you know what? I go with whatever's on sale for this. That's Colgate.
So tell us about this Colgate team. I mean, were Auburn fans kind of building this team up too much, or did Auburn just kind of take care of business last night?
This is a Colgate team that actually made the NCAA tournament last year as a 15th seed. They played Tennessee. I wouldn't say tough in that NCAA tournament game, but in regards to the Vegas line, they were able to cover thanks to a bank three in that game. So they were semi-close. They returned a lot of their pieces from last year, though. Jordan Burns, very good point guard. He was averaging like 15 points, shot nearly 40% for three. Does a good job of being able to shoot the triple. You got guys like Wyatt Raymond and Ivan Ravikanuthis. Hopefully I said that one correctly. I've always had an issue saying his name, but there's some tall guys. They were able to shoot threes, but what Colgate doesn't do necessarily the best job of is defense, and we saw that Samir Doughty was able to stroke it from three. How about how good he's been last two games in that game against CSUN? He was incredible. You've seen Javon McCormick doing a good job facilitating the offense. Austin Wiley had a double-double. This is a very impressive showing from Auburn.
Greg, in your mind, I think some Auburn fans are thinking it but nervous about saying it, but is Auburn ahead of schedule where you expected them to be? They brought back a lot of players, five guys, but they all essentially had new roles, and then they brought in a bunch of freshmen. Your thoughts on Bruce Pearl's squad at this point in the season and how they stack up against some other teams in their conference?
This team has won at warp speed over the last couple of games because first couple of games they had a little bit of a sweat against Georgia Southern. They get that narrow one-point win against South Alabama. Now they just completely mopped the floor with Cal State Northridge. Now, Cal State Northridge, without Lamine Janae, this is one of the worst teams in all of college basketball. I am stunned at how badly they have fallen off a cliff. But with them being able to put up the fight that they did against Colgate, it really does solidify the fact that Auburn seems to be getting right. I think what Auburn needed was just a little bit of an easier game or two, a way to get their confidence up. And I guess the Matadors were essentially that confidence builder, because now I really like what I'm seeing from this Auburn team. They're ranked in the top 25, rightfully so. And I do think that with Auburn, you're starting to see, because they have been able to get into some of these blows, some of the lesser guys that they can rely upon during the season, because they are going to need a little bit of depth going into SEC play. I think that they're out of a schedule compared to a lot of the other teams, like Alabama, who is going to be in action tonight. They have not looked good. They wind up losing on the road to Rhode Island by double digits a couple days ago. You also have a couple other teams out there, like a Mississippi State that's been okay, but we don't know what they are. We don't know what Ole Miss is because their last game came against Western Michigan. I feel like Auburn is leapfrogging in front of those sorts of teams.
What about a team like Kentucky, Greg? I mean, I don't think Auburn's at that point, but obviously they slipped to Evansville, which you called Evansville to cover, so props to you for that. But, I mean, as far as just Kentucky kind of getting its feet up under them and trying to figure out how to work together and play together, I mean, where do you think they are kind of on that timeline right now?
I think in regards to talent alone, Kentucky obviously has a little bit more of it, but without E.J. Montgomery, Kentucky has been a little bit of a horse of peace. And here's the big thing. Ashton Hagans, towards the end of SEC play last year, he seemed to regress a little bit. He hasn't found it yet. This is a guy that right now has an assist to turnover ratio right around one. They weren't able to generate any live ball turnovers yesterday. They had two total steals against Utah Valley. And what I found most striking about that game, Kentucky made 1-3. Now, I didn't think the Kentucky three-point shooting was going to be prolific by any stretch. I thought that they would go better than 1-for-12 against a completely new Utah Valley team that, let's face it, they're not awful on defense, but at the same time, they're not barreling down the hatches like Virginia or anything like that. So I think that Kentucky has a lot of work to do, and I think the biggest thing for them is just getting all their pieces healthy, because you can tell that Kentucky, not the same team when they don't have all their pieces out there.
Greg Peterson joining us again, as he does most weeks during basketball season on the lunch break. You can follow him at GUnit_81. Greg, you just mentioned him a moment ago, Alabama playing Furman. And Furman found themselves in the top 25 last year. Alabama favored by 4 points in this game. Your thoughts on the Crimson Tide? They're 1-2. I like the NATO attire, but so far a little bit of struggle for the Crimson Tide.
And the biggest struggle for Alabama is that they're trying to play much faster. Last year, with regards to possessions per game, they were 155th in the country. So they were right in the middle. They weren't going too fast. Mm-hmm. They weren't going too slow. This year, NATO, he is really trying to push the tempo. Going into Monday, they were in the top 15 in the country with regards to possessions per game. And this team really hasn't adapted. Alabama is just playing a little bit too fast for their own good, in my opinion. I like Kyra Lewis as a guard. I know that the team has had a couple guys that have been a little bit in and out of the lineup, but expected a little bit more out of James Vito Bolden. And then when you take a look at this Furman squad, they're one of the top teams in regards to rebounding in the country. You've got Noah Gurley. He's able to pour in some rebounds. You've got Muntz as well. Clay Muntz, he's able to give the team 5.8 rebounds per game as well. I think that Alabama is going to have a tough time on the glass. You don't have a Furman team that is necessarily going to bury a bunch of triples, but what they do is they do a great job of getting the ball inside. And with Alabama, they don't necessarily have a ton of size. I think this is a spot where which we could see Furman win the game all right.
Greg, I've got two quick questions for you. One, the next opponent for Auburn is New Mexico, and they play in Brooklyn. And so, one, could you tell us about this New Mexico team, what you know about it? And then two, from a betting standpoint, I mean, how do you factor in neutral site games like when both teams that are nowhere near Brooklyn travel to a place like that?
When it comes to neutral site games, that's actually how you handicap games, because you actually award points based on home court advantage, how a team plays on the road, things like that. So neutral court is actually exactly how you evaluate these teams. And let's face it, you don't get much more neutral than Auburn versus New Mexico in Brooklyn, because they have an advantage. I certainly think that Auburn is going to travel better than New Mexico. So
sure.
I have that for them. But with that said, with New Mexico, this is a team that they've got a guard in Jaquan Lyle that is absolutely ancient. I think that this guy, he had his freshman year during like the 2015-16 season with Ohio State. He has been out of college basketball the last couple of years. He's doing a good job giving out over 6 assists per game for New Mexico, but then gives out more turnovers than Sarah Lee Baker. He's giving out over 5 turnovers per game. I think that he's in the top 5 of the country with that regard. With New Mexico, you've got quite a few guys that they're able to do a solid job. They're made up of a bunch of transfers. Carlton Bragg used to play at Kansas. He's right now pulling in 11 rebounds per game. But this is another team that, much like Cal State Northridge, they want to play with their hair on fire. And the fact that they turn the ball over so much and Auburn thrives on being able to get turnovers, I think that it's really going to cause for doomsday for the Lobos.
Greg, if you would, I'm putting you on the spot here, and we're early in the season, but if you would, who right now has played through 4 or 5 games in the season, in your mind, who's the best team from each conference? And this, of course, could change as we are only a few games into the year.
From the Big Ten, I really like what Maryland is doing. Jalen Smith has been doing a nice job with the double-double machine. Anthony Cowan is doing a nice job facilitating the offense. And the Big Ten in general has been a little bit of an underachiever. When you take a look at the Pac-12, Oregon, far and away, is my favorite team out there. You've got so many veteran pieces. Dana Holtman, in my opinion, is the best coach in all of college basketball. And then when you take a look at the SEC, I have been impressed by what Tennessee has done, but I would actually have to go with Auburn at this point just because Kentucky winds up losing at home to Evansville. I had high expectations for Alabama. They have not adapted to Nate Oates' style. I still think that the jury is out on the two Mississippi schools. Vanderbilt winds up losing to Richmond. Now, a solid Richmond team, but still, you can't be losing to Richmond. So I think that other than Tennessee, Auburn has been the best team in the SEC, and I would still give to Auburn at this point. When you take a look at the Big 12, I still think that it's going to be Kansas in the end, just because with Kansas, when they lost that game in the Champions Classic, they were without graduate transfer Isaiah Moss. Isaiah Moss has been shooting over 40% from three last year. He averaged 9 points, shot 40% from distance. So I do think that that's going to be a big addition out there in the Big East. I would have to say that it's a little bit of a toss-up at this point, because I was going to say Marquette. They wind up losing to Wisconsin a couple days ago, but you still have Marcus Howard, who's able to throw up 50 points on any given night. But how about DePaul going on the road against Iowa? They're certainly not going to be the best team out there in the Big East, but I would say of the teams that have been most impressive so far, they would have to rank up there. I think I covered all the conferences. If I didn't, just let me know.
Greg, got one more question for you, but we really appreciate you giving us some of your time. Where can people hear you and find you?
Oh, absolutely. You can find me on Twitter at JuniorsCourty1. And you can find my podcast, That's Cool with Steve Heitner, along with College Hoops Overtime Betting, on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, and TuneIn. If you're looking for some sports, entertainment, just a wide mix of fun stuff, along with a man that was a former cast member of Seinfeld, that is where you go to for That's Cool with Steve Heitner. That is 5 days a week. And then every single day, I break down every single day game in college basketball on my podcast, College Hoops Overtime Betting. If you're someone that you love just breaking down all these games, you love all the information that I give you with you guys on a weekly basis, that is the place to go for that, because I just go in depth on everything and I just nerd out and it's a lot of fun.
Yes, it is. I don't know how you go through that many games. In our obscure matchup this week, New Hampshire, I believe it's at Central Connecticut State, Greg?
Yes, they are. And that is Daniel Marshall's coach team. And when you take a look at Central Connecticut State, this might be the worst team in all of college basketball.
Oh.
They've got one player that's averaging more than 7.5 points per game, and that'd be Greg Outlaw, who shoots under 40% from the floor. With New Hampshire, they were the top under team in all of college basketball last year. If you were taking totals under with New Hampshire, you are a very rich man, because they were unable to get a lot going. But I still remember Sergio L. Darwich in a game last year was able to hit 2 threes to extend the game from regulation into overtime, which led it to double overtime, and they lost that game. I believe it was against Maine. So he's a guy that you should be looking out for.
Unbelievable.
And then with this New Hampshire team, you've got a lot of guys that they're giving the team a couple points per game, but Central Connecticut is just a squad under Daniel Marshall. They have been run to the ground. They're right now losing their games by an average of 33 points per game. Oh. They were actually a top 10 free throw shooting team last year. This year, they are in the 300s with regards to free throw shooting. No redeeming qualities whatsoever with the Blue Devils. So that is a reason why I think New Hampshire should be able to win this game and win this game comfortably. I just don't know if Central Connecticut is going to reach 55 in this one.
What is wrong with you? Great job, Greg. As always, you can find him on Twitter at GUnit_81 and here on the lunch break with us. Greg, thanks, man.
Always a pleasure, guys. Thank you.
Greg Peterson. That's why we call him the machine. Okay, I've put it off long enough. Gus Malzahn should be wrapping up with Justin, Josh, Tom, the Auburn beat, all that jazz. So we will get to Gus Malzahn's comments. I know for one thing, Josh has tweeted out that Gus says, you've got to score more points to win.
You're on the lunch break on ESPN 106.7.
All right, we'll have a quick segment here. Always appreciate the machine joining us.
That was incredible.
We were just debating how, like, I don't, I think you're right, Zach. You said, I don't think he's got notes in front of him. And because there's so many college basketball games each night, it's unlikely that, you know, that's such an obscure game. We do that every week. Justin started asking the most obscure games he could find. And so I followed suit. And there's just too many games to be able to draw that information.
And, you know, maybe he looked at, you know, since he knew he was calling into an Auburn station, maybe he looked at, you know, their next opponent and looked at New Mexico or looked at Colgate. But I don't think he did. I think he just knew it.
I think he's just a really good at his job. I'd like to ask you this. I hosted trivia last night. Huge success. Enjoyed my burger, fries, had some waffles.
It was one of my one of my favorite restaurants in town too. So I'm jealous I could not go. It was a little too late for me though.
Enjoyed it. Crowd was good. Need more of you to come out. Follow at Paint Sharpless. I'll always let you know where I'll be. Wednesday is bingo night, folks. Okay. All right. We're gonna start here with a television category. In the television show The Simpsons, Zach?
I don't know.
Okay.
Never seen The Simpsons.
Fair enough. All right, we're going to move on past that one.
The segment.
Which boxer returned from retirement and defeated Marvin Hagler in 1987?
Dude, I have no idea.
I wouldn't have known this one either. It's Sugar Ray Leonard. I think a lot of people have heard of that boxer, but like you wouldn't recall. All right, so far Zach and I off to a bad start in trivia.
Yeah.
Sorry about that, folks. We do have Auburn High School football this Friday. Looking forward to that. Auburn will be in the semifinals. They played Central once. Now they'll go to Central. Yes, what's up, Zach?
I just had a tweet I wanted to read.
Ooh, go for it.
So you kind of teased us a little bit going into the break, but Malzahn talking to the media.
Right.
And Josh Vitale and Justin Ferguson and Tom Green, all friends of the program. One is a stinking co-host, but they all say that Malzahn did not go into Saturday's game thinking Auburn would throw the ball 50 times, but it did. What are your thoughts on just the game plan getting that far away from them throughout the game Saturday? Because, I mean, he can say that he wants to run the football. Josh and I talked about this yesterday on Locked On Auburn, and it's they didn't. They didn't try to run the football. I mean, the majority of the runs, like, weren't even from running backs.
I guess I would say this. It's twofold. Like, on the one hand, they adapted, which is what Auburn fans want him to do more of. On the other hand, it did not get them the result they wanted, and so people are just sort of brushing it aside.
I just can't think of a scenario where it makes sense for him to throw it 50 times, unless you're just putting, like, a ridiculous amount of folks in the box. And, you know, at some plays they did, but a lot of the times it's just, I don't know. I really feel like they bailed out of the running game more than they should. And, you know, DJ Williams had a few okay carries. There was a stretch there where Boobie Whitlow had three or four in a row, and that was nice. And then, ironically, I believe that drive ended with them running to the side where there were seven Georgia defenders in the out of the booby cat on fourth and inches. But whatever, we got a call.
You just sound talking yourself into a flurry.
I just don't get it, man.
All right, John's on the line. John usually brings us some measured takes. John, what do you have for us today? Is it measured or is it a little bit more frustrated?
I'm measured, probably.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, but that wasn't what I did want to weigh in on something that bugs me, and this is a program for venting, correct?
This can be whatever you want it to be.
Well, that's what I'm going to do anyway.
All
what bugs me is when people describe this Auburn football team and they say, this is the greatest defense we've ever had. Now, you sit and think about that. Greatest defense we've ever had. That is not even anywhere close to being true. It's a very good defense, and I enjoy watching them, and I think it's the best defense we've had in a long time, certainly the best one since Malzahn's been here. But he hasn't been here that long. And, of course, I go back, and I know a lot of younger people can't remember, but the Dye era of the 80s, and 88 in particular, you say, well, they didn't score as much then. Well, nobody hardly scored at all on them. They hardly scored double digits. And you say, well, you have to make things relative. Well, I could. That was the number one defense in the country. And this one's not even close to that. It's really not. Georgia, you know, statistically had a better defense than Auburn did, or has had to this point.
Right. Yeah, I am curious that you're making a good point about, because it is so hard to go back and measure, you know, different eras where the game is played so differently. In my mind, when you started to raise that point, did go to those 80s teams.
Mm-hmm. And you go all the way back to 57, they didn't give up 28 points the whole year.
Yeah, and I think there's, you know, I don't want to totally discredit that, but I try to look back more to like the last 25, 30 years, and I definitely think the 80s, like the modern era, falls into that category where the athletes were just like nutrition and weight training, and it was just coming around.
Sure, but, of course there was.
But, now, your that, overall point, I think you're still making good points, John.
The team this year would destroy the 57 team. I'm not saying
right.
But what I am saying is, when you make things relative, they were the number one defense in the country then. And certainly the teams with Rocker and Stallworth and Benji Rowland and all that, that was pretty salty. They didn't give up much. If you got double digits, you had, you know, one of the games we lost in 88 was 7-6 at LSU. And they had one drive the entire game. They didn't make it across the 50-yard line until the third quarter. You know, and that was a good LSU team, too. So there are a lot of instances where I don't mind somebody saying, you know, this is an outstanding, this is a great defense. That's fine. But saying, oh, this is the best defense Auburn's ever had in the history of the program, that's just not even close to true.
John, some great points, and we appreciate it. We're up against a break here. We're just a moment behind. As always, thanks for giving us a ring. I think some good points to consider, and we will, moving forward, as we go into the final segment of Hour 1 here on The Lunch Break.
Follow The Lunch Break on Twitter at Lunch Break ESPN.
So we have news for you here, and that news is that Hour 1's almost done. And so because of that, we're going to talk about Gus Malzahn, and Blake Lovell will join us at 12:15.
So thoughts on this hour, Painter?
Enjoyed it. Good energy. Enjoyed kind of bouncing around. We talked a little football. We had some great calls. Then we went with Greg Peterson, the machine. He got us caught up on Auburn's win and what's happening around the conference.
You a Colgate or a Crest guy?
You know, usually I just look at the shelf, and one of them is like $199, the other one's like $230, $250 or something, and you know, so I go with the cheaper one.
Yeah, I always do the same thing. You know, I didn't think people actually cared about this, but I got married, and I just went to the grocery store shortly after I got married. You know, we've been married maybe a week or so, and we needed a new toothpaste. So I just grabbed something, and I knew Leah preferred one or the other. I got Crest. She wouldn't use it. She wouldn't use it.
Did
because
she not
it
brush her teeth for a couple of days? Like, what? How'd y'all work that?
No,
one
she
out?
She went and got her own tube of toothpaste.
Oh, that's all right. That's fair. So I am a person that understands brand loyalty. It's just not toothpaste. I think
that's not one that resonates with me. It's the cheaper option. There can't be that much of a difference.
But you point out that Leah has great teeth, so she knows what she's doing.
Beautiful teeth.
Okay.
Beautiful woman.
Apparently, I don't. I need to work on that.
Man, you have the worst teeth.
Thanks, dog. Thank you. Hey, Auburn High football this Friday night on Wings 94.3. We kick off at 7. Coverage, though, begins at 6:30. The AHS report with Coach Weingarten and Scott Bagwell is tomorrow, Wednesday at 6, right after the drive with Bill Cameron. We're going to head into our second hour in just a moment. You can follow Zach at Z Blackerby. I'm at Paint Sharpless. And we will get you caught up. We've been teasing it. We've briefly talked about some of Gus's press conference, but not much. So between Blake's conversation that we'll have with more college hoops and with Gus's press conference, hour two will be loaded. Don't go anywhere. Zach Blackerby in with me today. More Lunch Break straight ahead.
Sports leader, ESPN 106.7, a broadcast service of Auburn Network Incorporated.
What a wild ride you all missed as we transition from hour one to hour number two. Dose in Espanol. What's going on over there in the world of Gus Malzahn? Have you got the Twitter.com up? We've talked briefly about his time in front of the media. One of the things he said is that it is now a goal of the team to get to 10 wins.
Right.
They can do that with a win over Samford, which seems inevitable. Then, of course, the Iron Bowl and a bowl game.
Yeah.
I think that this is a good thing to publicly state. It's a difficult goal to go 10 wins in this conference. And if you beat your biggest rival along the way and can win a decent bowl game, even though it's going to be a disappointing season and a noisy offseason for Gus Malzahn, if you're 10-3 against this schedule.
Yeah, so you go 9-3 with the win over Alabama. And then what bowl does that put you in? Does that put you at Tampa? Does it put you in Tampa?
Possible. I mean, there's a number. I think it's just too early to really know. Yeah. But yeah, Auburn is in an interesting spot because it could very well be a 10-win season with probably the second hardest schedule in the country, and Auburn fans will still feel let down.
Yeah. So that put them in Tampa with a Penn State or a Minnesota maybe. So, I mean, another big win at the end of the year, that'd be fun. So yeah, looking at what Malzahn said at his weekly presser, the first thing he said was, quote, "I want to say that we're hurting for Brother Chet, our FCA chaplain. He lost his son over the weekend. It sounds like there was an incident in Atlanta, so that is a shame." Then Malzahn says that he remains very proud of his Auburn team for the way it fought to come back against Georgia. He also has high praise for the fans for the atmosphere they created in the fourth quarter. He mentioned that the goal is now to win 10 games, like you said. We mentioned this, Painter, at the tail end of last hour. Malzahn said that he did not go into Saturday's game thinking that they would throw the ball 50 times, but it did. Running backs only carried the ball 20 times. And then this is really insightful, but Malzahn said you've got to score more points to win the game. And that's something that really sticks with me, so that's important. Then he said, every game is different, every situation is different, which once again, that really says a lot. So
321-1390, join us. Let us know your thoughts, your takes, Auburn football, basketball. Gus Malzahn has wrapped up his time at the podium, but we are spending time here in hour two discussing it and some of what he said. Interesting. Let's go back to that point you brought up and we briefly mentioned in hour one. Gus Malzahn last week saying that they would run the ball a lot. That ended up not being the case.
Yeah, definitely not the case. Definitely not the case. I mean, when you take out the quarterback runs, I mean, the running backs, I mean, they didn't have the majority of the carries, and that's very, very interesting. I mean, you know, they ran the ball with Schwartz. I think Stove got a rushing attempt in there, and then Bo got it 13 times or so, and then you look at it, and the running backs got 20. So that's it's interesting. It's not what you expect. I mean, you kind of do the whole, we got to run the football type thing. That's what he said going into the half. And it just, it's not like you tried it and you failed. It's like you didn't even like try it consistently. And, you know, there were times where Booby was able to pick up some decent gains on early downs and you went away from it. And you didn't cover it up by like quick passes as far as like screen stuff behind the line of scrimmage, what they've done in the past, you know, that Ryan Davis role that has seemingly disappeared from this offense. But, you know, the quick stuff to Schwartz and let him run and, you know, things like that. The Eli Stove plays that he used early on in the game and ended up scoring a touchdown in the second half. But those weren't really sprinkled in there. So, I mean, some of those pass attempts could look like rushes, but that wasn't really the case here. I mean, they were throwing it down the field. You know, Seth Williams caught the ball. Most of those, he caught them on 13 catches, and a lot of those were quick slants. Some of those he turned into bigger gains, but yeah, I mean, they did not make an effort to run the football. So that is, it's interesting. It was an interesting move.
Speaking of Seth Williams, he was awarded an offensive helmet sticker, Javaris Davis defensively, and Aaron Sipos, unsurprisingly, gets the helmet sticker for special teams.
I was talking about this on my podcast, Locked on Auburn. Check it out wherever you get your podcast. But Javaris Davis got a lot of credit for how good he played, as he should. As he should. I mean, several pass breakups, and even when he wasn't thrown to, he was able to. I mean, he was a blanket on Georgia defenders. But a guy that I really haven't heard his name, and I don't know why, but he was incredible on Saturday. Noah Igbinoghene. If you were not talking about a defensive back, holy cow. I mean, he has disappeared as far as chatter goes, but he has been outstanding this year. He's been great. And so I just want to make sure that gets thrown out there, because he really wasn't targeted, and his name was not mentioned in the broadcast hardly at all. But I mean, for him to be doing what he's doing is strong.
334-321-1390 is how you can join us here on the lunch break. We'd enjoy hearing from you as we recap some of Gus Malzahn's press conference. We'll have audio for you later on in today's show. Greg Peterson joined us in hour one. Blake Lovell will join us in just a few minutes, and we will talk college basketball and especially SEC hoops with Blake. With Noah, there was some talk about him making the jump to the NFL. Don't you sort of get the sense that he'll be back for one more year and it could be a really, really good year for him?
No, he's gone. I mean, this is a guy that this is his second season and really first full off season playing defensive back. And the NFL is going to see what he's been able to do in the SEC in the best
short amount of time.
I mean, the sky is the limit for this guy. I mean, he looks like an NFL corner. I remember when he made the switch back when Ben Wolk was in town writing for SEC Country, and he was kind of the one that said, like, hey, watch Noah with me. You know, this is a they kind of made that switch. And I don't remember if it was in spring or fall that year, but we were talking like he already looked like an NFL corner with that long frame. I mean, his arm's almost a little too long where it looks a little weird. But I mean,
attention to technique because of the other sport he competes in.
Yeah, triple jump. So, I mean, this is a guy that, I mean, it looked like he was made to play corner. And the Auburn coaching staff, props to him for making that switch. I think he could have been a solid version of what Eli Stove brings to this offense. But, I mean, his ability to shadow receivers and to do the whole bump and run at the line, he's been awesome. He has been awesome. I think the NFL is going to like him a lot. It just depends what he wants to get out of this. Does he want to continue his time at Auburn? Does he want to get a degree? Is that important to him? Or, you know, is he going to try to do the upside? And, like, is getting into the first round important to him? I think he's a day two guy lock. I mean, I think he's a lock for a second or third round pick. But that'll be interesting to see. I mean, do you think he stays?
I get the sense he will, but I can understand why.
It just depends what's important to him, right?
Yeah, and also, like Jamel Dean, he's probably going to – Auburn's got a couple guys this year that I think will be mentioned as guys that are draftable, and like him and Tega come to mind, and even Marlon, who's probably a second-day guy, right? But they're going to test so well. It might change people's perceptions of them, and we're watching them up close – so we get that. We cover them.
I think Javaris is there. I think Javaris is later than those guys, but I think the NFL is going to like Javaris Davis just because he's so fast. Like you said, testing well. Jeremiah Denson, he's going to be in interviews, and he's going to take over drills. I mean, just talking to guys that have played with him, I mean, he's the alpha in the room. It's Jeremiah Denson. And, I mean, Auburn's going to have some guys get their name called this offseason. It's going to be fun to see. I mean, last year was fun, too, just watching all these guys go, but I mean, there's going to be, I think there's going to be five or six guys that get drafted this year. It's going to be good for Auburn.
Congratulations to Robin of Midland, Georgia. She won a $25 gift card from Good Times Bowling for winning our college football challenge. This week's winner gets $25 to Johnny Brusco's New York Style Pizza.
Ooh.
Yeah, just go to ESPNAU.com or WingsFM.com to sign up. The ESPN 106 College Football Challenge is presented by Fetch Me Delivery, Good Times Bowling, Niffer's, Key of Auburn, and Johnny Brusco's New York Style Pizza. More lunch break with Blake Lovell straight ahead.
Like us on Facebook at ESPN 1067.
You're listening to The Lunch Break on ESPN 106.7. I'm Zach Blackerby, filling in for Justin Ferguson.
We love him. I threw you on the spot there.
You did. That's fine. I've done this before. Painter Sharpless, man in the controls and making everything happen. Where are we headed next, boss?
Blake Lovell. We are going to be joined by Blake Lovell in just a few moments. We are getting him on the phone as we speak. So I'm looking forward. We talked to Greg in hour one. But, you know, he's more national. I'm curious to hear, you know, living out in Vegas, curious to hear some of what our man Blake has to say. He's in Nashville and always enjoy his college coverage. Logan, if you would, help me out here. 321-1390 is how you can join the show.
Well, I mean, the big question, and as far as, you know, Blake will be able to help us out with this, but a lot of Auburn fans were kind of upset with everything, with where Auburn was projected at the start of the year in regards to media days and, you know, national polls and all of that, saying like, hey, kind of expected to finish fourth in the SEC play, and a lot of Auburn fans were like, why in the world would you say that? You know, Auburn won the SEC tournament, went to the Final Four, but I mean, the fact of the matter is they lost so much production offensively, and it's kind of been amazing what they've been able to do with all these young guys. And even when you look at the starters, I mean, all of the starters are playing different roles. I mean, Javon McCormick got plenty of experience, especially in the postseason last year, was not the starting point guard. Samir is in a big-time different role. He was a guy that came off the bench, was kind of the seventh man, probably, in the rotation. Now he's Auburn's leading scorer. And also, not only is Auburn starting two, he's the backup point guard, which I think is interesting. And then you look at D'Angelo Purifoy. He's kind of back in that role of, you know, the starting four. And then Anthony McLemore was the starter at the five for the majority of last season. And Austin Wiley is now the starter there. So, I mean, everybody's kind of playing a different role. Even these guys that have had experience in different in situations like they did a year ago. And then you've got super talented freshmen thrown in there. Obviously, Isaac Okoro takes the cake, the SEC Freshman of the Week. He's been incredible. Turbo Jones, where does he fit into this? I think he needs more reps as far as being the backup one, so Samir doesn't have to do that all the time. And then Devin Cambridge is a guy that I absolutely love, and so he's finding different ways to be relevant for Auburn basketball.
I think a lot of Auburn fans are having a really tough internal struggle right now about Isaac Okoro. It's like, you want him to be good, but they all want to see Isaac come play with Sharif. They want him back. And like, I don't know if they're going
to
get that.
I mean, it's amazing to me that Auburn basketball fans are having that conversation amongst themselves. If you would have told me that 2 or 3 years ago, I'd have been like, you are crazy. But yeah, I mean, it's a fascinating discussion for sure.
Let's go to Blake now. Blake, how are you?
Hey, what's up, guys?
Good to have you back on. We talked to Greg Peterson in hour one about a number of different basketball topics. I want to talk some first about the SEC, and you may have heard just a snippet of the conversation Zach and I were having. Auburn fans loving the play of the freshman Isaac Okoro. Sharif Cooper made it official, signing his letter of intent. Understandably, Auburn fans want to see them play together, but Isaac Okoro is having the start to a season that might not give fans an opportunity to watch that. Your thoughts so far on the freshman?
Yeah, no, he's been really good. I mean, there's no other way to put it. Yeah, we were talking, I remember back at SEC Media Day about how, you know, Bruce Pearl was saying, you know, he could probably, I think Okoro was probably the best defender as a freshman that he had coached. And the thing is, he's not just defending, though. Like, he can score, he can do all this stuff. And
I think it's just sort of a situation where, look, I mean, you only expect the kid to get better from here. And like you guys were saying, I mean, that's going to certainly add to his draft stock. And you see him kind of shooting up the board here on several of these places that have sort of updated their 2020 NBA mock drafts in the past week or so. And it's a situation where as long as he keeps playing well, I mean, certainly the attention is going to continue to grow on him.
Blake, your thoughts on Auburn thus far in the season? I thought that they had a little bit higher of a ceiling than some folks were giving them credit for, but it made complete sense to be a little bit hesitant on Auburn. I think a lot of people thought, yeah, there's a team with talent. Bruce Pearl's recruiting well, but they're losing some of their most historic figures. It's also only 5 games into the year for Auburn, so I don't want to get too far ahead of myself. Do you think that at this point in the season, though, it's safe to say Auburn might be more of a contender than folks initially believed?
Well, I mean, I'd say through 5 games, I mean, I'd make the argument that Auburn's the best team in the SEC right now. I mean, I think when you watch how Kentucky's played, they haven't looked great since that opening game against Michigan State. Florida obviously hasn't looked great. Those are the two teams we thought would be, you know, the main two, and certainly they've still got 30 games to get there.
Right.
But based on what we've seen so far, you know, Auburn doesn't have a Washington win like Tennessee does, but I mean, I'm just saying, I'd probably, you know, find it hard to not put Auburn and Tennessee 1 and 2 right now and put Kentucky and Florida behind them, because we've seen. I mean, you know, Kentucky's got injury situations, and Florida just looked terrible on offense. And when you consider what Auburn's done, it's, I keep telling people, I think it's easy to look at Auburn's schedule and say, well, you know, South Alabama, Colgate, Georgia Southern. But we got to remember, I mean, you know, several of these teams are picked to win their league. And most of these teams, pretty much everyone on their schedule thus far, was picked to finish top three in their league. So they're not just playing, you know, the 350-something ranked team in the country. They're playing teams that people expect to at least have a shot to make the NCAA tournament. And as we've seen the past couple games, they're not just playing them, they're beating them unmercifully. And to me, that's a sign of a team that if they go out and dominate teams like this, they certainly have a lot of potential. But, yeah, I think at this point, you can make the argument for Tennessee, but I think Auburn probably has a better argument if you watch these teams play.
You can follow him on Twitter, at the Blake Lovell, and also check him out with Clutch Points. You wrote a story, or there's a story up that folks can check out on your Twitter timeline. The morning after college basketball, you and Joseph Nardone disagree a little bit. Talk about the quality of wins and where it is you guys sort of butt heads.
Yeah, we were laughing because we do this every morning, and he always does his first, and mm-hmm. usually we talk about different things, and he's like, well, what are you going to write about? I said, well, I just read yours, and I disagree with you, so I'm going to write about how I disagree with you. So we had a lot of fun with that one, but it goes back to what I said. I think we have to remember, too, that we have, I mean, it's only five games in, and I know it's easy for people to look at some of these teams. Take, for example, Davidson. You know, I think Davidson's a team that can win the A-10, they can win multiple games in the NCAA tournament. But it's hard to convince people of that when Davidson goes out and loses at Charlotte by 13, you know, after they lost that game against Auburn and played pretty well against Auburn. And then you have a team like Colgate, who, like we say, is the favorite in the Patriot League. But it's also hard to convince people that Colgate's a good team when they've lost three straight games by double digits, but they're all to, you know, ACC or SEC competition. So I think we have to keep that in perspective. In terms of the preseason projections, they are what they are. They're not always going to be right, and probably in a lot of times they're not right at all. But the teams we project like this, like the teams Auburn have played thus far, we're projecting them towards the end of the season to say, okay, they have a really good chance to win their league. They're not going to win the SEC. They're not going to win the ACC. But they have a really good chance to win their league. So I think that speaks to something. And some of these wins, like, for example, that Auburn has thus far, they may not look great now, but I think by the time the season, you know, if we're looking up in late February, early March, I think these wins are going to look a lot better.
Blake, you among some other folks have pointed out Florida, a team that a lot of folks thought could rival or be better than Kentucky because of their blend of experience and talent and the addition of Blackshear, not shooting great thus far.
No, not at all. And there we talk about preseason projections. There's a reason you don't make your Final Four picks in early November or late October, because I went out and said, oh, yeah, I can see Florida getting there and all that. But I said this. I mean, yes, to an extent, we can use the they have 30 games to figure it out excuse. But at the same time, it's a clear problem right now. They are just so bad on offense. They're so bad shooting the ball. They're 321st, I think, now in three-point percentage, 24.1% from three. I don't think they've shot better than 42% in the game this season. They're just not good, and that's the problem with Florida is they're always so good on defense to where, let's say they were just an average defensive team. I mean, if they were just an average defensive team, they'd be 0-4 right now. But they're so good on defense that at least it's been able to help them win a couple of these games. But they've got to figure it out on offense. And if they don't, they're going to be a middle-of-the-pack SEC team. They're not going to be 1A and 1B like myself and a lot of people thought they were with Kentucky to start the year. They've got to figure it out. And the problem is, you know, their schedule doesn't get any easier really before conference play. They've got some really tough tests on their non-conference schedule coming up. So it's going to be interesting to see how that unfolds there.
Alabama 1-2. I like the Nate Oates hire. They play Furman. Furman found themselves in the top 25 last year. Alabama favored by 4 points. Your thoughts thus far on what has been a bit of a shaky start for Alabama, but as we continue to deflect back to, it's early and they've got a new coach.
Yeah, I think that. And I mean, look, their injury situation hasn't been good. Mm. They've just had, you know, they lost the two guys before the season started that we all expected to play key roles for them. Herbert Jones has been injured. You know, Beetle Bolden's been banged up a bit. They just, I think that's pretty much played a big role in how they wanted to play, because we have to remember, I mean, they're playing at such a fast tempo, it relies on having sort of a deep rotation. When you've got guys that have been hurt or guys that aren't going to play this season, you expect it to be in your, whatever, 8-9-man rotation. That can kind of knock you a bit, and I think we've seen that thus far in some of these games. Will they figure it out? I think so. But I also think there's a situation where you look at their non-conference schedule, you know, they still got Battle for Atlantis. They've got Furman, like you said, which is not going to be easy at all for them tonight. They've got, I think, Penn State. There's a lot of teams on that schedule they can lose to with a non-conference portion. And so I think you kind of look at it that way, and it wouldn't be surprising if they're struggling for a bit here. But I do think with Kyra Lewis and some of these other guys, as they start to get a little bit more acclimated to the system, I think Alabama's still a team we're probably talking about having a shot to make the NCAA tournament once we get to March.
Blake, where can people find you? Where can people hear you? You are a busy guy, and you've got a number of different outlets.
Yeah, way too busy guy. On Twitter, like you said, at the Blake Level, you can check that out. ClutchPoints.com, that's all my written stuff. The podcast, Marching to Madness, and Southeast Hoops podcast. So, yeah, all over the place. Check all that out. Been a fun start this season so far.
Blake, your favorite to win the SEC through, I guess, your way too early prediction, putting you on the spot. We spent this entire segment talking about how it's too early and we haven't played enough games, haven't played a single conference game. All right, you've got a little bit of information now. You can adjust. Who are you going with at this point?
Well, like I said, if I had to pick through five games, I'd pick Auburn. And that's not just because I'm on the radio with you guys there. I just think they've looked the best of any team that's played so far. You know, if myself that does this every year that I revert back and pick Kentucky, I'll probably do that. But
yeah,
again, through five games, Auburn's the best team to me. So
it's early. It's early. We haven't gotten to conference play, and that'll be telling and fun. The league getting a lot better, and Blake Lovell is covering it all. Hey, man, appreciate it. I'm sure we will catch up with you in the next few days. Thanks, Blake.
Sounds great. Thanks, guys.
Appreciate it. That's Blake Lovell again. Check him out with Clutch Sports. Enjoy his commentary. He's done some good work with Athlon as well, and SoutheastHoops.com. Zach Blackerby is in with me. We've talked a fair deal of basketball today. We have been bouncing back and forth between Auburn hoops and Auburn football. You can join that conversation, 321-1390. And if you missed any of today's show, remember that podcast of The Lunch Breaker presented by University Ace Hardware. They're available on ESPNAU.com in our podcast center, SoundCloud, iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. University Ace is your Auburn helpful place, located next to the movie theaters.
Listen to The Lunch Break on the Abbey Award-winning ESPN 106.7 app.
.321-1390 is how you can join us here on The Lunch Break. Zach Blackerby in with me today. 321-1390. We bounced around a good bit and covered a fair amount of Auburn basketball. Actually, Greg Peterson joined us in hour one, and Blake Lovell joined us in hour two. So let's transition back now. Oh, what's up, Zach?
I was going to ask, you know, how have you found the response been from, you know, talking about football to talking about basketball? I mean, it's amazing to me. Even last week, going into the Auburn-Georgia game, I mean, folks wanted more Auburn basketball talk, not to talk about, you know, Auburn's second biggest game of the year. I mean, that's just, it's weird times that we're in right now.
A few things I think about that. One, the perception and culture is fully in change. Auburn got a four-star commitment in basketball. We'll see how that pans out and, you know, how valuable that contribution, his contribution comes. But Auburn fans didn't blink very much when a four-star basketball player committed 3 years ago. That would have been leading news if you were on any sort of Auburn website or listening to podcasts, whatever.
Yeah.
That's becoming normal. The other thing there's a real sense of optimism around basketball for a few reasons. One, I think the Cinderella run, Bruce Pearl's charisma, and also Auburn fans aren't used to this yet. Auburn fans have different levels of expectations for their football and basketball teams, and it kind of feels like Bruce Pearl keeps overachieving.
Yeah.
And the expectations in football, well, probably the opposite.
Yeah, I mean, you can't get much closer than Auburn did last year. I mean, there's only two more stops you can go. You go to the championship and lose, or you win the whole thing. And, I mean, they came as close as they could to make it to that next step. And it just doesn't really seem like they've slowed down a whole lot. Now, we're going to see more once conference play rolls around and this team starts to gel together and other teams start to gel together more. We'll see how far this team can go. But just from a talent standpoint, it doesn't seem like there's been a whole lot of drop-off.
321-1390 is how you can join the program. Rob will do that now. Rob, what's up, man?
Hey, y'all are right about this basketball team. I mean, it everybody's going to say, well, that's what Saban calls it. But any great organization I've ever been a part of, I work for a great company. We're an investment banking firm. It's a process. We've been in business 50 years. We're not successful because we're lucky. We're not successful by accident. It's structure. That's what Bruce Pearl does. That's why everybody at Tennessee loves the guy and would crawl to Auburn with a contract if he would sign it. But, you know, not that they got a bad guy, Rick Barnes. I mean, somebody's got to be Auburn's whipping boy. Look, Bruce Pearl, what he's done at Auburn, our students are unbelievable. The support. I mean, I talk to people around the country. They go, good God, what did y'all do? Your basketball, it's unreal. And y'all are right. I was driving back from Atlanta last night, you know, and got back. I got to listen to the game with, you know, Andy and Sonny.
Mm-hmm.
God, I mean, it's just. And we got this kid out of West Memphis. People in Memphis are freaking out.
Right. Well, and, you know, Rob, I don't know if you heard that part of the conversation, but Zach and I were just saying, like, people have sort of, not totally, but it's sort of like ho-hum. Auburn fans are just like, yeah, of course a guy that's really good at basketball wants to play at Auburn. What are you talking about?
Yeah. Well, you know what? Something interesting. Bruce Pearl, if you ever talk to him, if y'all ever do, ask him about his friend, Dr. Ed Wiener, up in Memphis. Ed Wiener just retired maybe 3 years ago, worked in my building here for years as a dentist, and he's still sharp as a tack. I talked to him 2 weeks ago for about 20 minutes, and he was Tennessee's first basketball All-American, okay? Came down from New York, from Brooklyn. And what's amazing about it is that the Ernie and Bernie show happened because he got a call from the UT basketball coaches and said, hey, at 1 o'clock in the morning, by the way, do you speak Romanian? He goes, no, I don't. He goes, let me find someone. They said, well, we need someone because Ernie Grunfeld's family, they're Romanian. They speak, the Romanian language. And he found somebody and made it happen. And once, that's how the Ernie and Bernie show happened. Ask him about Dr. Ed Wiener. But from the day we signed Bruce Pearl, March of 2014, I remember Dr. Wiener telling me every day, he's going to be the greatest. You guys are going to love him. He goes, he's going to be like Nick Saban in basketball. He goes, he's going to get this thing going. And look at it. It's just, and I got to tell you, you just can feel Rod's presence with Andy. They were so close.
Right.
And then having Sonny there is just, he's incredible as a color analyst. So, you know, I love this basketball. And here we go again, getting pulled away from football.
Hey, it's wild.
I want to ask y'all something. Tell me this, what y'all are here. I listen to, a lot. Y'all do your homework, but you were at the game Saturday. All of y'all were in the double wide over in the corner called the press box. what do y'all think about? I mean, look at the top 10. There's one coach, Nick Saban, that left another school after having gone to the NFL for 2 years, and now is at Alabama. How many of the other coaches left a big job like an Auburn to go somewhere else or left a job like Oklahoma to come to a place like Auburn?
I think I know where you're going with this, Rob, but this has been a conversation point, at least what I'm about to say, and that is there are not many coaches who leave Auburn on their own decision. Like they usually like the community. It's seemingly a good place to
has
work.
Has it happened?
I think someone said Mike Donahue was the last. Yeah,
1922.
He left for a $10,000 contract, guys.
Things are
crazy.
Yeah, a little different now. I'm just thinking of like top 10 coaches right now, or as far as coaches of top 10 teams, and like, I mean, clearly like Florida is a better job than Mississippi State. So like, I don't even think that fits in this conversation,
sure, right?
So I mean, that's the only one I can think of.
Yeah, I mean, Auburn's a top. I mean, look where we are. I mean, now we look over to our east. We've got the bully over there, Georgia. Look to the south, we got Florida. In southeast, southwest, whatever, we got LSU. We're in the state of Alabama. In Tennessee, I'm telling you, Jeremy Pruitt is getting them cranking again, and they're starting to feel it. And, look, I bet a sack full of crystals, a steamer pack, 24 of them, with one of my traders that Tennessee would win 8 games this year. He thought I was crazy after the Georgia State game. He called the bus from the nervous hospital to take me out there with Carl from Sling Blade after they lost to Brigham Young. But I said, I'm telling you, Jeremy Pruitt is a hell of a coach. He's going to win. Now, I don't know what we're going to do with Gus. I don't have anything personal against him. But it just, we get in there. We have a national championship caliber defense and a Belt Bowl or a Poulin Weed Eater Bowl offense. And it shouldn't be that way. And what do y'all see 6-15 against LSU, Georgia, and Alabama? We can't accept it, guys.
It's probably the most, I guess you could call that subjective, but in my mind, it is the most damning statistic for Malzahn because it is so important, obviously, anywhere to beat your rivals. And that has been an area for a number of reasons that they've struggled. I think the flip side of that conversation is not many teams, including Auburn, are consistently beating those three main rivals. But that is certainly a conversation I think we'll continue to have as the final month of football and the offseason comes upon us. And Malzahn said today at his press conference, and I think this was a good thing to publicly state, that the goal of the team is to get to 10 wins to beat their biggest rival. And that, of course, would mean winning a bowl game. You know, for all the noise around Gus Malzahn, and there's a lot of it, and some of it's certainly understandable, 10-3 against what I would consider probably the second most difficult schedule in all of college football, a win over two top 10 teams in Oregon and Alabama, and a bowl win, it's going to be tough to argue with. We will get to break, our final break, What's on the Night, coming up next. You can join the show. Thanks for the call, Rob. Always appreciate it. 321-1390 is how you can do that. The AHS report tomorrow night, Wednesday, with Coach Adam Weingarten at 6 after the Drive with Bill Cameron. Thursday, the Coach Pat Dye Show, Neil Callaway joins Coach Dye and Tim Ellen. And this Saturday, Penn State and Ohio State, TCU, Oklahoma, and a doubleheader for you Sunday in the NFL. Lots going on here at ESPN 106.7. We'll be right back.
Listen to the Lunch Break on your smartphone or tablet with the free ESPN 106.7 app.
Just a few minutes remaining here in hour two. Unfortunately, we will not catch up with Justin Ferguson today. He was at Gus Malzahn's press conference, and, you know, it sounds like there was not anything breaking. Are you surprised by this, Zach? Sure, you aren't.
No.
But we did get some tidbits. I thought the publicly trying to get to 10 wins, saying this is our new goal. We didn't win the conference. We're not going to be in the playoff.
So you've mentioned two or three times, I think you quote tweeted it as well on Twitter, you know, with him saying,
lay out a defined goal. Your job, probably, I think he's,
you don't,
back.
You don't think that's obvious, though? I mean, you don't think it's okay?
I think it's good for him to say it. Okay. I think it should have been the goal. No, like, saying it or not doesn't change a lot, but I think setting a narrative and a direction of, like, this is what we're going for, and it's still really hard to get to 10 wins in this division and win a bowl game, something that Auburn, quite frankly, hasn't been phenomenal at doing,
right,
is finishing the season. And you can argue how much it really matters, by the way, but regardless, Auburn has not finished the season great in some bowl games, and obviously a big conversation point this week, and it will continue into the offseason, is struggling to beat your rivals. You got a good chance to do that when Alabama comes to town next Saturday.
Yeah, you do. I mean, this is the best chance you may ever have until Nick Saban leaves. I mean,
a young defense and a backup quarterback.
Yeah. I mean, obviously you hate what happened to Tua, and that's become national news, as it should be. I mean, a guy that had a good chance to win the Heisman, and a guy that's got a really good chance to be the number one pick, and, you know, all that's kind of gone away now just because of this hip injury, because you don't know how good he's going to be when he comes back. And so that's going to be interesting to see what his decision is. But, I mean, Auburn's going to play Alabama regardless if Tua's there or not, and he's not going to be in that game. So that's going to give Auburn the advantage, and it's at home. And, I mean, I think Auburn's going to beat Alabama in the Iron Bowl this year. But My question then is how do fans react? Is that enough?
Right now, because we talked about this, a lot of Auburn fans saying, well, I don't, you know, there's an asterisk next to it. Fine, but when they, if they win, I think they'll win too. I thought they were going to win both their big rivalry games in Georgia, so I'm already way off base since they did not beat Georgia, but I still think that they will beat Alabama for a lot of the reasons you just mentioned, but it'll be a good game, by the way. You know, Auburn fans are going to be excited when they beat Alabama.
Right, right. I don't think it matters. I don't think it matters what Alabama fields. I think Alabama could be 0-11 and be, you know, the worst team in college football. And Auburn fans are going to be excited when you beat Alabama.
The weird part here is this year won't just determine an SEC champion or, and this has been an even bigger picture, where neither, you know, Alabama not playing in an SEC championship in 2017, but Auburn did. But this has been a huge part of the national championship and playoff race, more so for Alabama over the last 10 years. But Auburn has been a part of that. And because Auburn usually comes into November in a place contending, that game has always meant a lot for the playoffs. And at least Auburn's had a chance to knock Alabama out of that conversation.
Well, and that'll be the situation this year, right? They'll have a chance to knock Alabama out. I mean, Auburn's out of it, but Alabama's not out of this thing.
Let's go to the phones, 321-1390, as we close out today's show. 10 minutes remaining, just a few more until we get to what's on tonight. Shane, what's up, man?
Hey, guys. I just wanted to say, you know, if we don't beat Alabama, then that's an issue.
Sure.
But if we do, for me, it makes no difference. We're supposed to, but it's a paper win, and it means nothing to me. We better beat them. That's all I can say is if we take out their best player and we still can't beat them, then I mean we better beat them is what I'm saying. And if when we do, yeah, we beat them. But did we? I mean, it's nothing to hang your hat on. It's nothing to brag about. In my eyes, you're expected to win now because they don't have their Heisman winner. You know, he probably would have won if he could have stayed healthy all season.
Zach, do you think Auburn will be favored in this matchup at home? I kind of think Alabama will still be a slight favorite.
It's going to be close. It'll be 2 or 3 one way or the other, but I would guess that Alabama is favored.
And that's sad. That's a sad thing. When you take out their best player, and we're at home, and we're supposed to have this great team, and we still are underdogs?
Well, you know, Shane, I hear that point, but let's not forget this team's averaging a national title every other year. They've got one loss to LSU. They simply have not been as dominant as some other teams that we've seen in the last couple of years. But they're a one-loss top 10 team that's still – in some way, a viable playoff option.
And Shane, I mean, Shane, you mentioned if Auburn wins, you know, you're expecting them to win, and I get that. But, I mean, you don't think there's any value out of Auburn ruining and putting Alabama, their arch rival, out of the playoff race? Because I think that's kind of the cry going into it, right?
No, because that's expected now. Because if you don't, then if you don't do that, then. What are we? Gus needs to go if that's the case. And I'm trying to be a supporter for Gus his whole tenure. But if you can't beat them when they're hobbling in, then you need to go. And it means nothing. It really doesn't. You better win that game without their best player. They don't have a quarterback. Yeah. I mean, I'm sorry, that guy is nothing. They can't hold a candle to Tua. Okay. I mean, and so. To me it has no flavor to it. You're beating a struggling. I don't know, man. It's just disappointment. Disappointment. I don't know.
Sure.
What else to say?
Sure, Shane. Appreciate the call. 321-1390. I think my biggest disagreement with Shane is along the vein of you can expect something and still, I think, have it mean something. You know, because, I mean, the argument of, well, you expect for Alabama to be not that great because Tua is out, which is what the argument that Shane is making. I don't necessarily agree with that. But as far as, just because you expect something to happen doesn't mean it can't mean something to you.
Well, flip it around. I think most years, probably since Nick Saban's second or third season as Alabama's coach, Alabama fans probably, and nationally, fans who are paying attention to the game go into that game expecting Alabama to win. Mm-hmm. But when Alabama, the few times they have lost, 2010, 13, 17, it was still a disappointment. Now, the situation's a little different because in each of those 3 years, Auburn was also inserting itself into the college football playoff or the title race. But my point, I think, is that it just because Alabama expected to win most of those years didn't mean that it didn't matter. Let's get to what's on tonight here as we round out today's show. As always, Shane, thanks for the call, man. Good to hear from you.
Time now for What's On Tonight.
Do I have a read for this?
No, sir.
No. All right.
It can be presented by Zach Blackerby of the Locked On Auburn podcast.
How about that? How about that? Yeah, what's on tonight? You got your college football playoff ranking show. That is from 6 to 7 this evening on ESPN. It's amazing how they make that fill an hour. Watch it if you haven't, just because it's kind of incredible.
That and the Heisman. Both of those things, you're like, probably.
That was like 3 hours or something crazy like that. So Eastern Michigan at NIU, that is on ESPN2 at 6:30. And Ohio at Bowling Green, also at 6:30 on ESPNU. And then looking at your college basketball, UMBC, they're 4-0, taking on LSU 2-1. That's 6 o'clock on the SEC Network. And then Boston University taking on South Carolina in the Cancun Challenge. South Carolina 3-0 on the year. That is on the SEC Network Plus at 6 o'clock. And at 6:30 on the SEC Network Plus, Seattle U versus Ole Miss. Ole Miss also 3-0. So some conference action happening tonight. Some unbeaten still in conference play. So check that out. I don't have House Hunters International. I'm sorry.
Logan, if you could, give us a Google search. Find out where we're going tonight for House Hunters International. Zach, what have we been watching? We have a Dan Peck RIP movie pick every day. So if it's on HBO, what's the most recent thing you're into? Have you gotten into, isn't there a Watchmen? Is that the new HBO? Did I get the name right?
I'm not a big HBO guy.
Fair
I know
enough.
Leah has been rewatching Game of Thrones.
Okay, yeah.
The most recent movie I've watched, Step Brothers, came on Netflix.
Of course.
So I watched that recently, and then I've been all about The Good Doctor.
Did you
and
touch
Survivor.
My drums?
I didn't touch your drum set.
And that's what's on tonight. Presented by Zach Blackerby and the Locked On Auburn podcast. Justin will be back tomorrow, and I bet
you miss Justin today.
Yeah, I miss Justin.
I miss Justin,
the voice of reason. He should have some work up for you today at the Athletic. Gus Malzahn's press conference wrapped up.
I'm impressed with the guys on the beat on like press conferences from like today's.
When you can it's milk like, a story,
yeah, they got like two or three stories out of him. Like, how in the world did you do that? That's impressive. So I'm always kind of curious to see what they pull out. So.
Enjoyed all the calls today, of which there were a number.
Which one did you like the most?
I like the contention in the air between Shadow and myself. And is that the right word? The tension, I think, is probably. But either way, Shadow, I will try and find.
You got to find that clip.
That clip where you owe me a steak dinner, my man. Also, James was genuinely thrilled to hear your voice, which is always
fun. Man, I love
fun.
James. You know, normally when I'm on, he calls in and we talk NFL for a little bit. You know, I give him a hard time about his Giants and he gives me a hard time about my Patriots, but that didn't happen today. I'm a little bummed, but I am glad he called in. Big fan of James.
The Preakness Stakes, the second leg of the Triple Crown, is held in which city, Zach?
No idea.
That would be Baltimore. Baltimore.
I would have gone south. I would have gone south with it. Not going to lie to you.
My God. Where can people hear you and find you, my friend?
I'm on Twitter at ZBlackerby. I also do the morning show, news talk show on News Talk WANI, 98.7 FM, 1400 AM. And for my sports takes, search Locked On Auburn. It is your number one daily Auburn podcast. So search Locked On Auburn wherever you get your podcasts. So yeah, that's it. That's it, Painter. That's all I got. That's it.
Love it. All right, that's going to do it for us. Justin Ferguson is back tomorrow. Thanks for hanging out, Zach. I know you've had a long day. Appreciate
I'm going to go home
it.
And go to bed.
Early starts for you. All right, that's it. Justin's back tomorrow. Stay tuned to ESPN 106.7 all throughout the day. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck today from 4 till 6. Stephen A. Smith coming up next. Remember, Auburn High School football. This Friday night, the semifinals, Central. It'll be at Garrett Harrison Stadium. So if you can't make it out to Central Phoenix City, just tune into Wings 94.3 Friday at 6:30. Appreciate Greg Peterson and Blake Lovell joining us today to talk a lot of college and SEC hoops. We'll be back tomorrow at 11. Until then, keep it toasty.